This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
And our job, my nation, that watched you grow, that you fought alongside and now fights alongside you, that takes enormous pride in our alliance and great affection in our common bond, our job is to be there with you. You're not going to be alone. We will be with you in this fight for liberty.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking Thursday to a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress, where Mr. Blair earned strength in confronting terrorism and defended the use of force in Iraq. Our senior news analyst, Dan Shore, joined us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And Mr. Blair, Dan, was acclaimed by both sides of the aisle, and yes, for that matter, probably Senator Jeffords, who's in the middle, for his eloquence.
But not very much in Britain, interestingly.
Well, as the Prime Minister himself said, that reception was more than I deserve and, frankly, more than I'm used to.
Yeah.
Got a good laugh and round of applause for that.
He's a very funny guy.
What did he accomplish, or was he unable to accomplish on this visit?
Well, I think what he intended to accomplish and may have was to reinforce a sense of partnership, a sense of special relationship between the two countries, which has been undergoing some buffeting recently. And then to show his own constituents, who are now mainly down on him, how much clout he has here in the United States, hoping that will help him at home, which it didn't very much, at least judging by the British popular press. I guess that the British are more accustomed than we are to eloquent speeches elegantly delivered. And maybe there was some symbolism in the fact that he was speaking from the rostrum of the House, which is where the President stands to deliver the State of the Union. A State of the Union message was also now in some contention lately.
Let me actually quote Mr. Blair on that, sort of preempt something, because it does seem to me that he advanced an argument which perhaps the administration might begin to cite. It should be said he stands by the story of British intelligence that Iraq tried to acquire uranium in Niger.
Yes.
But he says, Mr. Blair said, can we be sure that terrorism and WMD will join together? Let us say one thing. If we are wrong, we will have destroyed a threat that is at least responsible for inhuman carnage and suffering, something I'm confident history will forgive. He said, but if our critics are wrong, if we're right, and we did not act, then we will have hesitated in the face of menace. That is something history will not forget.
You picked a very interesting part of the speech, which also struck me, because, as Blair said, if we are wrong, beginning to entertain the possibility that their intelligence was wrong, which has no one in this administration has yet done. Mm-hmm. But then later on, when we were at the White House, Bush said, we won't be proven wrong. And so you begin to see a difference between one who says, with all the killings that were going on in Iraq, even if they didn't have weapons of mass destruction, it was still a good thing to do. I don't think that the U.S. is willing to make that concession.
So Mr. Blair was not able to change the terms of this debate.
I don't think he changed the terms of the debate very much. In this country, to say maybe we went in there, we kept talking about the fact that this was a great threat to peace, and we had this, we had to preempt action against the United States. And if you then say, well, maybe that wasn't such a very imminent thing happening there, but come to think of when you look at all the mass graves and so on. The trouble is that once you say that you invade a country because of its mass graves, you can't stop it, Iraq.
Let me ask, Mr. Blair had something, perhaps a smaller item on his agenda when he came to Washington, D.C. He was seeking the release of British nationals now being held as enemy combatants in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Did he have any influence with the administration on that?
Well, for all the great things that he has done for this administration, I guess he hoped they could do this one favor for him. I think his problem was not so much President Bush's Attorney General Ashcroft, who's devoted to having military courts trying enemy combatants of whatever nationality they are or claim to be. Blair got a partial concession, I'd say. That's to say, proceedings against the two British subjects and one Australian will be suspended pending some meeting of American legal experts to try to work out something. But this is not what he hoped for, Blair. I think he hoped to say, the President, at my request, has said, we will get those people. It's not sure.
What do you see, Dan, in the release of documents yesterday by the White House? Declassified 90 pages from a national intelligence estimate. showing conflicting interpretations of these efforts to acquire, or perhaps not efforts to acquire, uranium in Africa.
Yeah, well, the administration is still having to defend itself against that line in the State of the Union about the British have learned about buying uranium in Africa. And they're still it's turned into a tremendous flap in this country, a much greater flap than I ever would have anticipated. So yesterday there was this hour-long briefing at the White House, and as you say, they released some excerpts of last October's National Intelligence Estimate, which reflected the internal conflict about Iraq. On one hand, it says, as most of the six intelligence agencies believe, there's compelling evidence that Iraq is resuming uranium enrichment. Then there's a footnote. State Department is highly dubious of all of this, doesn't believe there is such compelling evidence. I mean, this is really a political fight within the White House. This is no longer a matter of facts. This is a question of the president in January was getting ready for a war to start in March, and he needed to bring the public in, and he needed to have not only possibilities of biological and chemical, but a boy be dandy if we could talk about a nuclear threat. And so they contrived to talk about a nuclear threat.
Is it clear the president got all the information that ideally a chief executive should have?
Well, the latest story today in the Washington Post is that this National Intelligence Estimate was not even read by the president, nor even by Condoleezza Rice, his National Security Advisor. It is not that the president doesn't have enough information. It is he gets the information that he wants. And for the past year or two, it's been clear from the White House and the intelligence agencies that you get an open door and a lot of pats on the back if you come up with evidence of a big, big threat. And if you come up with evidence that there isn't a big threat, you tend to be shoved out the door.
And, of course, this controversy is unfolding, we have the death in Great Britain of British defense expert David Kelly.
Yes, this whole thing is spinning off in so many directions. There's David Kelly, who was suspected being a source of the BBC. The BBC had denounced the British dossier and the subject as being highly exaggerated. And so when the BBC came out with trying to expose that fact, for some reason they thought that David Kelly, who was worked for the Defense Department there, may have been responsible. And he was called before Commons and asked a lot of very nasty questions. And the next thing was he'd gone home, lived near Oxford, went for a walk, it was said, and was found dead.
It's the British police, by the way, as we're speaking just now, British police have announced that the post-mortem reveals that a slash to his wrist, left wrist, was the cause of death, and there was no indication that anyone else was involved.
I don't know where this all will stop.
We do want to ask about Iraq, because for the first time this week, U.S. military commander in Iraq described Iraqi resistance as a guerrilla-type war.
Well, you know, what we have here is that the military people in uniform seem to be willing to be straighter with us than our civilian leaders in charge. And so he says it looks like a guerrilla war. The sophisticated tactics, sophisticated weapons, ever more sophisticated every day. And I guess that's what you call a guerrilla-type action. I don't know why Don Rumsfeld can't say that.
And do you foresee any greater international effort?
I think they may have to go back to the United Nations if they're going to get the support of Germany, France, and Russia. So we're going to have another big fight, UN or no UN, once again.
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.